welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. Always wonderful to be with you in your studios.
Well, it is great to have you here in the KUT studios. Welcome to the studios. Welcome to campus. You are speechless.
I didn't realize.
Okay.
How many welcomes will there be?
That is a moment we preserve that Ed is speechless. Okay. I'm going to guess that a time when you are not speechless is when you have students to the president's house on the Southwestern campus for dinner. I know that's a tradition that you've started. It's been going for a while.
Right.
First of all, tell us a little bit about kind of why you do that and what those evenings are about.
It's a tradition that I started when I arrived 4 years ago, where I committed that every student before he or she graduates from Southwestern will be invited to dinner at the president's table in the president's house. And you know, sometimes these dinners, just generically, you know, you have a big dinner with, you know, four or five round tables that each, you know, hold about 8 or 10 people. But I didn't like that because the idea was I wanted one conversation. I wanted to be able to talk to everybody. And if the president sits at one table, then there's four other tables that are absent, which maybe are the good tables. I don't know. But here I arranged to have constructed, actually, a very large table that seats 18 people. You haven't come yet. I want you to come, by the way.
Invite me anytime. I'm ready.
Oh, look at you. Okay. Well,
I'm ready.
I'll invite you for the fall.
Awesome.
And so it's 18 people, 12 students, and then 6 faculty, staff, friends, trustees, alumni, and so forth. And I personally make the seating chart, so no two non-students sit next to themselves. So all the non-students are surrounded by students, and it's a very nice, it's on china, very fancy kind of thing. And the first part of the dinner, just fun. Talk to anyone you want. See if you can engage with as many people. There's lots of yelling and screaming across the table. It's a big table.
Uh-huh.
People are talking here and there. But then around dessert, I'll gather all the conversation together, and I'll introduce a topic. And it's always something that's just whatever is truly on my mind at that point. So it's not scripted or anything, but it is not announced in advance. So no
so
one knows.
So people can't prepare. They
can't prepare. You can't think about
notes.
It. You can't
okay.
come with
notes.
Exactly. And then I expect everyone to engage in the conversation, one conversation. So everyone's listening to everyone else and one person speaking at a time as you're so moved. And the way that I always put the instruction is that I invite everyone to contribute, which is the way I say it is. It's the politically correct way of saying you will talk.
Uh-huh.
Because at the very end of the evening, I will go around the table. I go into what I call the lightning round. And if you haven't spoken yet, I'll come around to you and say, Jennifer, we haven't heard from you. And you just offer one reflection. And it could even be, I found the conversation thought-provoking. I mean, it doesn't matter what you say, but you will have contributed, which to me is a metaphor for what we do at Southwestern University. Everyone contributes, and then you leave the president's table, and that's the dinner. And they're great. They are so wonderful.
Oh, I bet. I'm sure it's really interesting, especially this particular topic. You said that recently the students may have been all seniors, I think.
That's right.
And you ask them to share what advice they would now give. So having they're just about to finish their
right.
4 years at Southwestern University. What advice would they give back to their first year selves, right, when they
That's
were
right.
starting college,
That's right.
what did they say?
It was really a fun conversation. We're getting to the end of the academic year, and so that kind of was on my mind. I always tweet out a picture of the table, you know, the people at the table, and then I always tweet the comments, so that must have been where you saw it. And it was a really, really interesting conversation because, you know, again, it always catches people off guard. They said some fantastic things. One of the kids said, this wasn't the deepest thing, but I think it was the most meaningful in my mind, given and maybe to you too and our listeners. He said, don't blink because it's going to go that fast.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Right?
The 4 years zooms by.
I thought that was so meaningful to me because I'm like, that's exactly what happens in life. You know, you blink.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, so then there were people talking about how important relationships are. And again, we're a small liberal arts undergraduate institution, but so a lot of people were describing the meaningful relationship they've had with faculty and staff, but also with other students. So you got that kind of comment about, you know, how meaningful it is to have those connections. And then a lot of people, when they arrived, didn't realize how impactful those interactions can really be. And so I found that thought-provoking. And then the kind of things that we actually talk about came up independently about, you know, they came here wanting to major in X, and then they accidentally took a course in Y, and they fell in love with Y, and now all of a sudden they're they're majoring in Y and love it. And so this idea of being open and being flexible and being open to change, which is, of course, one of our themes for the for our program. But it was great to hear students talk about that.
Was there anything that really kind of surprised you or took you off guard and you thought, oh, I wouldn't have necessarily thought of that?
Well, I will tell you, the blink of the eye was meaningful because I didn't think that someone that young could have that insight. You know, I thought it's like one of these old curmudgeon-y things that I would have. But he really said it goes really, really fast and you've got to appreciate it all. Also, people were talking about different affinity groups. Mm-hmm. So whether you're involved in some athletic organization, performative, you know, chorale or the theater, or whether you're in an organization, a club, a student group of any kind, how important that is and plays in. And again, it was the question was, what do you wish you knew then? And so these comments were really, I think, challenging themselves to see how much they've changed, which to me is the real measure of education after all.
Well, one thing I know I would like to sometimes know ahead of time is the answer to the puzzler, because sometimes I will struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle. And looking back, I'll think, I wish I knew the answer before we started, which is, of course, impossible.
I had a wonderful math professor when I was an undergraduate who used to always say, you know, students would say, he was a kind of a very old, very thick German accent, wore bow ties, you know, at a central casting. And students would come up to him before an exam and say, boy, I really wish I knew the questions. And he would say, no, you don't want the questions, you want the answers.
Right. That's what you really want.
Implying, I think, insultingly, that even with the questions, you still couldn't get it right. Uh-huh.
So this episode, we are working on a solution. We had a puzzler last time.
I gave a tricky one. Let me remind our listeners to the puzzle. Puzzler was a little tricky. We have this very, very cruel math teacher.
Mean teacher.
And what this individual has done is it has two bowls and has 50 white marbles and 50 black marbles.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher gives these to you, the student.
Mm-hmm.
And you are to arrange and place the marbles in the two bowls in any fashion that you want, as long as all 100 marbles are in one of the two bowls.
Okay.
And then what's going to happen is you'll be blindfolded. The bowls will be then kind of mixed, you know, kind of shuffled around, but not the marbles remain in them. But you know,
you don't know which bowl now is in
bowl one and
spot.
Bowl two are now mixed up, right? You will select one of the two bowls. You will reach your hand in and you will select one marble.
Okay.
And then you get to look at it. The blindfold is lifted. If it's a black marble, you get an A. If it's a white marble, you fail the class.
That is mean.
I'm telling you, this is a mean teacher. The question is, what is a way of placing those marbles so that you have the highest or a really high probability of getting an A? That was the challenge. This is, I think, a really tricky question, by the way. It took me a while to kind of think about
this. Yeah, this is
tricky. I have an answer. I hope so. Well, maybe people can have a better answer. I don't know. I can give you my answer. I don't know if you had time to think about this.
Well,
this was kind of tricky.
It was tricky. I mean, I think I sort of started revolving around, first of all, the idea that you've got a 50-50 chance of a black or white marble. So you're sort of starting from that. And how do you up the ante, if you will?
Can you amplify
that?
Right.
Can you? Especially given the fact that, because you can obviously fill one bowl with black and one bowl with all white, but then the bowls are shuffled, so you've lost any advantage you had. So,
but I like your thinking is really great, by the way, even if I don't know if you've ended up coming up with a guess or not, but I love the thinking of realizing that first, just given that the number of marbles, if you put, you know, all the white here and then all the black here, then in fact it's a 50-50 shot.
It seems like whatever you do, it's a 50 shot. So tell me the road that you went down to get the solution.
So here is what I came up with. And if listeners have come up with a better one, I'd love to hear it. So my thinking is this. First of all, using your thinking, that it's a 50-50 shot of picking one of the bowls.
Right.
So no matter where, what you put in what, you're going to pick a bowl. It's a 50-50 shot of picking one bowl A or bowl B.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So let's put one black marble in bowl A.
Uh-huh.
And put all the other marbles in bowl B.
Okay.
So for in actuality, we have 49 black marbles and 50 white marbles in one bowl.
Right.
And then we've got one black lone marble in the other bowl. So for thinking purposes, really, it's almost a 50-50 in that larger other bowl. Okay. So now, it's a 50-50 shot of picking either bowl. So with the probability of 50%, I'm going to pick the bowl that just has the black marble.
Uh-huh.
When I pull that out, I get an A.
Right.
So that's a win right there, 100% chance of winning 50% of the time.
So this is so interesting because as you're explaining your answer, I'm realizing this is another example of how I sort of in my head create rules about these puzzlers that aren't there.
Oh.
I thought the marbles had to be equally distributed.
I never said that.
See,
I just said they had to all be in a bowl.
I didn't say that you said that, but what I'm saying is it's interesting
how I imagine
other listeners sort of create kind of rules or a framework for these, either based on previous puzzles or, you know, just math, I'm saying problem in quotes. That's really interesting to me because I was working off of, okay, so there got to be 50 in one, 50 in the other.
No. Never said that.
So I know, but it's interesting.
So this is not quite the correct math, but here's rough math.
Yeah.
So here's rough math. So in the other bowl, where it's basically a 50-50 shot, and there's a 50% chance of getting to that bowl. So that's a 50% chance times another half. So it's a half and a half. If you multiply them together, you get a quarter.
Uh-huh.
So there's a quarter probability that you find yourself in that bowl and then get a black marble. There is a half probability of picking that other bowl and picking that one marble, add them together,
so you got 75%. So you've upped it by...
It's going to be a little under 75% because that one marble is missing, but it's essentially 75%.
Yeah. Which is better than 50-50.
Yeah, and I think that's the best that I know how to do. If a listener has a better one, they should send it
in. Send me an email, jstayton, J-S-T-A-Y-T-O-N at KUT.org. Send me an email and we'll chat about another path, if there is one, in a future episode.
That was tricky, wasn't it?
That was a tricky one. I like it though. Tricky is good, right?
I think tricky is great.
So Ed, just as we wrap up our discussion here, I want to notice the advice that the seniors were telling you they wish they had given or wish they had known 4 years ago when they started school. One thing that's interesting to me is the advice certainly was not exclusively, but how much of it was about their school experience in life, not in the classroom. You know, you're talking about affinity groups they were in or relationships that they formed, connections they made, how fast the time went.
Right.
Obviously, the classroom time is an integral part of their experience, but it's interesting that a lot of the impactful things that are staying with them that they commented on were more holistic.
That's right. Now, of course, to be fair, there were several comments about the relationships, including faculty and staff. So that implicitly involves classroom. But I will say that there were only two students out of the 12 or so that really picked on this idea of, for example, changing their major and changing their courses. And I think that's reality. I'm not surprised by that because as I have said, and I think maybe even on here with you, I've shared that I think that the most impactful elements of one's growth through education, especially formal education, is often happening outside of the classroom. And that's why residential life and co-curricular activities are so important and need to be thought of in the same intellectual context as we think about our curricula.
Well, Ed, thank you for always helping us keep our brains sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.